Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Unexpected Witness by Penny Zeller. If she can identify one person, she can bring down an entire crime network. Nurse Myla Casey did not expect to witness a murder in the clinic's parking lot, nor did she imagine seeking protection from the at-large killer would land her on a secluded ranch owned by handsome but standoffish Rourke Brennan. Myla finds herself in the center of ever-growing danger as the police are unable to locate the suspect. When the protection of the ranch is compromised and Myla's location is discovered, can she, with Rourke's aid, stay one step ahead of a crazed murderer who intends to silence her forever?
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Penny Zeller, who was known for her heartfelt stories of faith-filled happily ever afters and her passion to impact lives for Christ through fiction. So welcome to my show, Penny.
Thank you, Sarah. It's great to be here.
Now, you write romance, and you also now write romantic suspense. So why did you start writing romantic suspense novels?
So I mainly live in the historic 1800s, with a few times of coming into the present. And I have always wanted to write romantic suspense. I love reading it. My grandpa was a police officer for the San Diego Police Department, and he had amazing stories to tell us. So I thought, well, you know, why not try my hand at writing one? So, of course, I fell in love with writing this subgenre. So that started, and it was also on my bucket list, something that I've wanted to do for quite some time.
Oh, I love that, Penny. That's so funny, on your bucket list. Right, romantic suspense. Yeah, well, I guess you can cross that one off, huh?
Yes. We writers, we have weird things on our list, don't we?
We do. You know, we do. We really do. And we could take a huge rabbit trail down to bucket list land, but we probably shouldn't. But I agree. We do have interesting things on our bucket list. But I did want to go back to, you know, you had said that you read a lot of romantic suspense and you've always loved the genre and that's why you want to write it. And I think, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I kind of fell into it. Actually, that and my agent was like, I think you might be good at this. Why don't you try romantic suspense?
That's always good.
I know. It's like, sure. Actually, before she was my agent. But anyways, suggesting that. And it was a great suggestion, and I love the mystery part of it. I love putting the puzzles together, and I tend to not identify the bad person behind it until the end. I like that cloaking part, so you don't really know. I probably read too many Agatha Christie novels as a kid, a young person. Always loved not knowing what was happening. It's just such a fun genre to write. So welcome to the darker side of romance with the suspense, romantic suspense. And we're happy to have you. You can still write, you know, your historical romance is short, but, you know, just know that, you know, this is a fun genre to write. And I don't think I could actually write a straight romance because I'm always like, aren't they in danger? What's happening? Are they trying to solve something?
I love that.
Although I do love reading those kinds, so that's fine. And this is a question that I always love to ask because it's something that I think we sometimes can all struggle with at different parts in our writing careers. But when do you find time to write? How do you work writing into your schedule?
That is, I think, always a challenge. Of course, we would like to be, you know, on those memes where the, you know, the professional writer is just so dedicated and that's all they're doing is typing and they never, you know, daydream or have to get up and get a bowl of popcorn or whatever, you
right.
know, and that's not how it is in real life. I think finding that time and sticking with that can be challenging. For me, while I do write full time, I also have another part time job and a family, a husband and two daughters. So I have to be really intentional. When it's time for me to write, it's time for me to write. And I wish I was a morning person because, you know, that you can get a lot done in the morning, but I'm not. So I end up sometimes staying up far too late, and that's usually when the really good ideas come, and especially now with suspense, you know, with the darkness outside and stuff, those ideas seem to come really fast. But I basically just have to really be intentional about it. And what I have started to do is set the timer and have sprints around my other stuff I have to do. And I don't get to check social media. I don't get to, you know, stop typing and just, you know, gaze around or whatever. I have to be intentional and write during that whole entire hour. And then I can take a break. And since I've started to do that, I think I work well on deadlines. That's really helped me to focus.
No, I love that's a great point. And so for maybe some listeners who might not know, writing sprints are basically you set a timer and then you just write as much as you can within that time period. It could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour. It really just depends on what you want to do. But no, I'm with you, Penny. When I'm writing, when I'm editing, I tend not to do that. Occasionally, I will too. I'll like close my email program. I'll close out my web browsers. Even though they're still on my computer, I don't have them open because, and I don't have my phone anywhere near my workstation. Because then I tend not to do that anyway. I tell them if people need to get a hold of me, call my trusty landline. I have it for a reason because cell reception in our house is not always that great. So I'm like, that's the best way to reach me if you desperately need to reach me because I'm not checking. I don't want to be distracted by my phone all the time. But for writing, I have to put those things away, or
Yes.
because writing's hard, or I'll just, you know, fritter my writing time away with avoiding writing, which we do sometimes, even though we love writing.
Yes. Yes, we do. And I always laugh because, and you probably do this too, Sarah, when we're on those writing sprints, we don't want to take the time to look up research or take the time to look up a name. You know, there has to be the perfect name, right? You know, your character can't be a Joanne when she's, you know, supposed to be a Caitlin. But, and we're sitting there typing, and what I will do is I have so many lines. So Mr. Blank or so and so, or you know, just a blank here and a blank there, so that I don't take the time to do all that, so that I can stay focused on writing during that writing sprint, and then I can always go back and you know fill in those blanks with the research or the names. So, but I always crack up because I'm always worried it's going to stay in there for the
Oh
editing process.
yeah. Yeah, right. No, what I do is I only name and sometimes the names will come to me. If they come to me, I'll write them down. But for the secondary characters and stuff, if they don't, I will write just like best friend, and best friend will be in caps. And then I just do a search and replace. Like I have so many detectives. Detective kidnapping, detective break-in, detective I just do that. Because then
That's a
I
good idea.
know. Yeah, I don't know why it came to me years ago because I can get obsessed about the names and it can just bog me down. So I leave that for the editing. And like I said, occasionally the name I'll be typing and not this for the secondary character and the name will just come to me and I'll just type it in. But most of the time, yeah, I'm in the editing process of one book and I'm going back and I'm like, oh yeah, I need to name detective kidnapping. There was a kidnapping in the book. So, all right, what am I going to call? And then I can take the time to look those up and call those, figure out their names. But I don't want to slow down and find, you know, do it. So, but
Yeah,
yeah, I will
that's a
look.
good
I will
idea.
put in like, check this out. Is this accurate? You know, I'll put those in like all caps. Highlight it
And I
sometimes
do
just
that in
to.
brackets.
Yeah, brackets, cap, whatever. You know, it's just that's a great way to keep us writing without slowing down. So, do you have a favorite spot for that reflecting on your current work in progress in your house?
You know, in my house, my husband, several years ago, we converted one of the bedrooms into a home office, and this is my sanctuary, and I love it in here. It has a big window, and I've got my exercise equipment and stuff in here, along with my writing stuff. So I love it in here. It's nice and quiet, and I can pretty well put away distractions if I'm in here. He built me a desk and cabinets and everything, so I love it in here. But if you ask me where I would like to be to, like, go over stuff and maybe start, you know, editing process myself before I pass it on to the editors, it would definitely be outside in the summer with my flowers. I'm a flower addict, so that is where I love to be in the summer. But obviously, I live somewhere where winter is more prevalent than summer, so that's not always a possibility. But I love my home office.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think if I had a window, I would be too distracted. But just looking out and just kind of gazing out. No, my office happens to be, it's in our finished basement. Well, we have two levels, just in the bottom level. But it doesn't have any windows, so it couldn't be a bedroom. So,
oh, okay.
Which is kind of nice because I'm not distracted by anything. Of course, I don't know if it's day or night. Unless I'm looking at the clock, right? Yeah. So I there's that part of it. There's that part. But other than that, it's kind of nice because I can close the door and generally not hear anyone, and it can be kind of quiet. If I remember to lock my cats out, because they can be kind of noisy. One is actually mewing outside the door. You can't hear them, but I trust me that they're there. They're there and trying to bother me. Yeah, most of
well,
the time
hilarious.
One it is, yeah, and most of the time one will sleep kind of behind my laptop, so I think she likes it because it's warm. So, but when I'm typing, when I'm working and not talking, like for an interview or a Zoom meeting or something, they're quiet. So it's only when I'm talking that they're noisy. I know, hilarious, right?
Well, and you know, my husband, he loves to, you know, the birds and stuff, and he's taken it very seriously to put up the bird feeders in the summer and feed them and make sure they have water and everything, the wild birds. And so he hung up a bird feeder right outside my office window, and I hear what you're saying about distractions with animals, because I'm not kidding, that day I got nothing done. My nose was like pressed against the window watching the finches, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so awesome.
I know.
Take that and move it
well,
to the backyard.
Yes. You're like, out of the way. I can't be staring at the wildlife there. So besides your lovely window and your beautiful office, is there something else absolutely essential that you need for writing, like coffee, music?
You know, I pretty much like it quiet, but in the winter, I do have a little fireplace. It's one of those electric ones that my husband bought for me. So having that on, I wish it was a real one, but it's okay because those flames sometimes, just that relaxing, just really gives me inspiration. So that's another thing I like. And then, you know, just basically being able to get up and move around a little bit with the exercise equipment. I have an elliptical and a exercise bike and some bands and stuff. That helps also so that, you know, I don't just sit all day, which is unhealthy. So
yeah.
That helps to have those as well.
Yeah. I've flirted with the idea of getting a walking desk, but then I'm like, who am I kidding? Or a standing desk. And I'm like, I could, but I think I would. I'm like, I'd have to rearrange everything in my office and get like, and I really like the way it's set up. So I just tend to get up a lot as well and run up the stairs or, you know, do something. So I generally do not sit longer than, you know, if I'm lucky, if I can sit for an hour without having to go do something else. So I figure that's pretty good.
Me too. I'm very hyper.
I think we have time for one more question, and I like that you picked this one from the list. What do you wish readers knew about the romantic suspense genre?
Well, a couple of things, because I thought this was a fun question too. One of them is that it is harder to write romantic suspense than one would think. And, you know, you really have to get inside the head of evil, for one. And for two, there's a lot of research. I do a lot of research with my historical books, but there's a whole different type of research that you have to do with the suspense. And you know, sometimes I think we kind of seem a little bit goofy because we're asking about bad guys or, oh, what will happen, you know, if, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a lot harder than people think. That's something I personally have found. The other thing is that it can keep us on the edge of our own seat and even up at night because bad guys literally live in our heads, right? So, you know, I don't like real violent stuff, and my books wouldn't be really violent like that, but I would have to be careful that I wouldn't, you know, do something that would be scary and or watch something scary as, you know, influencing me for a scene or something and then have it give me a nightmare or something. So that those things are a little bit, you know, hard if you are a visual person like I am and you want to write romantic suspense. You just have to be really careful, you know, what you look at for research and stuff so that it doesn't bother you personally.
Yeah, no, I love what you, yeah, there is, and I love what you said about that. I mean, we do have to research some sometimes a little bit darker subjects because we want to, there is evil and darkness in the world. But what I love about writing romantic suspense, Christian romantic suspense, is that we can give our characters that resolution that evil doesn't prevail, that God and his love, you know, he, because the bad guys get caught, there's happily ever after. That's what I love about our books, that we can have that balance to some of the darker things that we have to talk about.
Yes, because the world is hard enough. You know, people live hard lives. A lot of people live hard lives and are going through a lot of hard things. So like you said, to be able to have that happily ever after and have that resolution is huge for us to be able to give our readers that.
Yeah, and that's a perfect way to end our interview today. So I really appreciate you being on my show and sharing today.
Thank you again for having me, Sarah. It's been fun talking with you.
And listeners, stay tuned. As you know, you'll be hearing an excerpt from one of her romantic suspense books, Unexpected Witness.
Now an excerpt from Unexpected Witness by Penny Zeller. The day couldn't get any worse. Myla charted the information from her last patient, relishing the silence after what had been a chaotic 8 hours. Dr. Birch left 15 minutes ago, and after she tended to a few more tasks, Myla would be on the road home as well. Her legs throbbed from little downtime, and a headache formed at her temples, courtesy of the challenging patients who collectively decided to make today their day for an appointment. Add to that the pungent stench of vomit still lingering in the air from an earlier patient, despite Myla's best attempts to sanitize the area several times. Thankfully, within the hour she'd be on her way home, were leftovers, a new book she borrowed from the library, and a hot bath awaited her. She jumped as a loud banging on the front door interrupted the silence. The light above the door gave just enough of a clue as to the visitor's identity, that in his trademark worn-out red tennis shoes. "What's he doing here again?" Brittany Mead, the administrative assistant, stalked to the door she'd locked only moments before. "He's already been here once today." She cracked open the door and glared at the visitor. "You," she hissed. "I gotta be seen." "No, you don't. You were already seen today, and besides, we closed 20 minutes ago. It's a Friday night. Go home." "But, no, go home. You got what you needed." Myla started to the door. "If he needs, he doesn't." Brittany shut the door and locked it again, waving the man away. "Besides, he can come back Monday." Myla hated turning anyone away, even if the patient was a hypochondriac who stopped by nearly every day with a new ailment. She watched as Troy Pollard limped into the darkness. Myla finished charting, then emptied the trash can while Brittany resumed tending to a matter on her phone. "There's Antonio," Brittany said, as car light shone upon the outdoor steps. "Gotta go." Antonio, Brittany's boyfriend, pulled up alongside the clinic in his larger-than-life four-wheel drive truck with a massive lift kit. He honked the horn not once, but four times. Brittany grabbed her belongings and dashed out the door, leaving Myla alone in a building that was too quiet, too still, save the ticking of the wall clock with the second hand perpetually stuck on the number 3. Not much happened in Upton, population 1,498, even at 7 at night, and especially not with a winter weather advisory in effect for a spring snowstorm. Who in their right mind would be out in that type of weather? Besides, this wasn't the first time Myla had been the last one to leave. Why, then, were her hands shaking as she completed her time card? The furnace kicked on with a rumble. The noise startled her, and Myla took a few deep breaths to calm her already anxious mind. Lights from a passerby illuminated the now nearly dark office, lingering longer than necessary toward where Myla stood. She just wanted to get home. Moments later, her clump of keys firmly in one hand and her purse on her arm, Myla stepped out of the clinic, locked the door, and grabbed the black railing as she made her way down the stairs into the parking lot. Streetlights overhead cast an eerie glow through the thickly falling snowflakes. A cup of tea and a bubble bath beckoned her before getting some much-needed sleep and repeating the process all over again tomorrow. When Myla parked her car 8 hours ago, it hadn't seemed so far away. But now, doing her best not to slip on the unshoveled parking lot, it could have been 5 miles to her vehicle. The wind whipped around her and she quickened her pace. Her car was just steps ahead. It was then that she saw two figures to her left near a light-colored car. One person had his back to the car while the other stood facing him. She couldn't hear words being spoken, but she could see spasmodic movements. Impending doom jolted her, but she shoved the fear aside. This wasn't the time for an overactive imagination. Myla took a few steps back, debating whether to continue to her car, which was much closer than heading back to the clinic. Perhaps it was just two people in a spirited conversation. But this late at night, and in this weather? She eyed her car, now only a few paces away, and squinted through the swirling wet snow that hampered her vision. She shuffled toward her car, attempting to hurry, but not slip. And then Myla noticed something she could never erase from her memory. She saw contacts made from one person to the other. One withdrew his arm, knife in hand, the streetlight glinting off a dark substance coating the blade. The attacker braced the victim against the car, then launched into a series of rapid stabs. The victim slumped and crumpled to the ground. Myla's legs locked and her body went numb. The attacker pivoted toward her. "Move! Feet, move!" She willed her body to obey. He rushed toward her, knife in hand. Myla's brain kicked into motion, and she fumbled with the key fob, furiously pushing the button to unlock the door. She reached for the door handle. The fob had failed. Again. She pressed furiously on the button. "Unlock! Unlock!" Myla cleared a spot by wiping the snow with her hand, manually stuck the key into the lock, and flung open the door. She scrambled into the front seat and slammed the door. Her heart constricted, and her breath came in gasps. "Lock the car!" In her panic, Myla fumbled and accidentally hit the unlock button instead.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.